Hey everybody, it's JJ Sefton with yet another edition of the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast. It is Friday, February the 11th, 2022. I am joined once again by my co-blogger CBD and making his podcast debut, our co-blogger over at Ace of Spades, our colleague and friend, Joe Mannix. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
How's everybody doing on this fine, beautiful day?
It's actually a spectacular day in the Northeast. It's about 45 degrees. It's fantastic. So I'm enjoying it.
It's real beautiful where I'm at, too. I'm looking out at my thermometer, and it says 60, which is about as nice as it can be.
It's a beautiful weather for white supremacist insurrection. Always fair weather. And, you know, it's amazing. Joe had a wonderful essay the other day on the blog about the situation involving the Chinese coronavirus and just how everyone is pushing these vaccines, whatever your opinion of them are or not, and totally, shall we say, suppressing and persecuting anybody who brings up any counter views on that and promotes the proven effective therapeutics like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And it's all just a complete political dodge to get these vaccines.
Yeah, and what I find really deeply troubling about it is that monomania around the vaccine. The vaccine is the only treatment. And if you want to talk about another treatment, whether it's one of the things you mentioned or even just lifestyle choices, keep your vitamins up, get in better shape, things that should be pretty obvious, you're just blacklisted. And importantly, I think it's that blacklisting on doctors who might try to give one of those treatments. We hear a lot of talk about how there's no official early intervention protocol. And I think that's a problem in the world where so much decision-making is sort of handed down by public health authorities. But even a bigger problem in my mind than there is no official protocol is there's also no ability for your doctor to say, I think we should try this. If your doctor, between you and him or me and my doctor, were to say, I think we should try X, whatever X might be. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it might be dangerous for somebody who's not me. I don't know. That's why we're going to talk to my doctor about it. But we're not allowed to even have that conversation. If my doctor were to try to say, yes, I think this is something that you should try, he could lose his medical license. He could end up being persecuted by the government or by the press if it leaks out. And we're in this position now, and I think it's really tragic and really dangerous, where anybody thinking for himself or willing to try something that's off of that dictated, handed down public health scheme is now requiring an act of great courage. And it's going to the doctor and receiving advice or being a doctor and giving advice should not be something that requires great courage.
And it's I wouldn't say it's unique because I can recall the FDA stepping in and the CDC stepping in occasionally over the last, I don't know, 30 or 40 years, ever since I've been sentient. But it is certainly quite a rare circumstance. And what's most frustrating for me is that, not that the therapies that you mentioned are effective. I think they are effective looking at the early data, but they are not dangerous. They are safe for human beings. They've been used countless hundreds of millions of times. We're talking about the two big ones, the HCQ and the ivermectin. They've been used for other diseases literally hundreds of millions of times, and in the case of ivermectin, billions of times, with a fantastic safety record. So for the FDA to step in and the CDC to step in and say, no, these are unproven therapies, therefore you cannot use them under pain of losing one's license, is so obviously political. It is so obviously a way to push America and the world, unfortunately, toward these unproven vaccines. And either they're stupid, or I don't think they're that stupid, in addition to pushing them toward these unproven vaccines or poorly proven vaccines, they are pushing the public health mania that we have seen over the last 2 years. And it's been horribly destructive to the United States, all in service of what I can only say is a fascist takeover of the United States.
Yeah, and I think it's a great additional point. And I think it makes there's another factor in which it is incredibly dangerous, and it's not just to public health. It's what it implies about everything else, because as you point out, these are things with a great safety track record. You know, dosing is not some great mystery. The side effects are not some great mystery. The contraindications are not unknown. But we are in this position now where if it's off narrative, whoever sets the narrative or what the narrative is, sort of notwithstanding, if it's off narrative, it's now dangerous. It's now unproven. It now must be avoided. And that is a catastrophically dangerous position to be in.
You know, I can't personally understand, and I guess I'm just being sort of, I don't know if I'm being naive or stupid or both, and I've been accused of being all of those things, and sometimes maybe I am, but I just don't get it. I mean, is it just a factor of, because Donald Trump early on was promoting therapeutics, that all of a sudden there was this knee-jerk reaction of, because he said it, we now have to condemn it? Or is it because we've gone so far down the road with these, with pushing these things, because they've condemned them because of Trump, Trump mania or Trump hatred, that there's no other alternative? Or is there some other, you know, again, it's crazy, I get into these tinfoil hat conspiracies. Is there some other reason that we must do this or else? And even still, even if everybody does this and complies, well, now we've got to get a booster shot number 3. And then there's booster shot number 4. And then there's booster shot number 5. Is there something going on here that it is just the compelling of people to do things just for the sake of compelling them to do it? Or is there a profit motive vis-a-vis whoever, Fauci or Rochelle Walensky or their relatives or the people in Congress having stock in Pfizer and Moderna and Johnson? Or just, I just don't understand these things. I mean, we've never done this in all the times we've had these horrible breakouts of pandemics, of viral pandemics, whether it was SARS or MERS or Ebola or chikungunya. You know, we've never locked anything down. We never required masks. We never required vaccines. In fact, I remember maybe 10, 15 years ago when one of these viral outbreaks came about, one of the pharmaceutical companies developed a vaccine. And literally when I think it reached maybe 10 people or somewhere between 10 or 30 people had died from an adverse reaction, they pulled the vaccine. Now, all of a sudden, we have evidence of many people getting very sick and very, very adverse reactions, and that's all covered up. And nobody wants to talk about the VAERS or V-A-E-R-S, the, I think, Vaccine Adverse Episode Response.
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. And anybody who even brings that up is condemned. So this is just, I mean, it's, I don't understand what the hell
is
going on.
Well, you have to embrace the power of and that is that the profit motive is clear. The revolving door between the health bureaucracy, the American health bureaucracy, and Big Pharma is vile. It's disgusting. It needs to end. And the FDA needs to be burned down because of it. It won't happen, but that's my dream. But also, I mean, I think it's transparently obvious that this is a power grab. This is a way to control the populace. The fact that it's a wonderful way to criticize Trump and it's a wonderful way to separate Trump from the herd is certainly a bonus for them. And it even started as simply a way to go after Trump. But this is the socialistic power grab that they've been dreaming about for 100 years.
It is. I think to sort of your point, JJ,
go ahead, John.
I think it started out, the attack on therapeutics in particular, I think started out as a great way to get to Trump and push him out of the herd, to borrow what I think CBD said there. But beyond that, I think this is also, therapeutics are against the default or new default approach for public health. This has been a huge opportunity for the public health establishment in a way, because we are now in this, we will develop a vaccine. We have the technology, we have the ability, we're smart enough. We're going to create a vaccine and we're going to lick this thing. And we're going to do it through vaccination, and we're going to do it in a way that's never been done before, and at a scale we've never seen before, and at a speed we've never observed in the world. And that's their only answer. Their only tool is that vaccine hammer. And every single problem is a nail, and any alternate tool has to be just thrown off the wayside. I think that's also a part of it. There's this sort of institutional pathology within public health that we're going to solve this through a vaccine. And so anything that's not a vaccine cannot exist. And I don't think there's some, puppet master pulling strings saying suppress all therapeutics, but I think there's an institutional attitude that this was our time to shine on the vaccine front. And absolutely. I think that's probably a factor as well.
Yeah, I agree 100%. But that's the mindset of any bureaucratic organization. And the FDA and the CDC are nothing if not bureaucratic.
Related to that in a way is we now have this, of course, the not diversity, equity, and inclusion, but I just flop the last two of those and call it diversity, inclusion, and equity, which spells out DIE everywhere now, where you have choose one from column A and one from column B, where you have medical schools and the medical establishment, which is now not necessarily dealing with disease or health or whatever, but dealing with racial politics in who gets admitted to be in medical schools and who gets to be doctors. And it's basically they're playing racial politics with this, and it's going to be disastrous when people who are completely unqualified or less than stellar in their abilities become doctors just because they're black or because they're Hispanic or because they're whatever. I'm not saying that black people can't be wonderful doctors. I mean, we look at Ben Carson. He's a stellar human being, but he didn't get there because it was affirmative action. He got there on his own merits and because of his own skills, and he overcame that. But it's just we're headed for a disaster of titanic proportions, not just in healthcare, but in every calling where skill and where ability is going to count, crucially count, whether it's engineering, whether it's medicine, whether it's the sciences, the hard sciences, down to anywhere else. Even we see it where it doesn't necessarily matter in fluffy careers like Ecuadorian lesbian basket weaving, being a professor of that at a liberal arts college. But this is all part of it, and it's just the institutional madness that runs deep through this is really going to bite us in the ass, and very, very soon.
I don't know if you saw the National Pulse. They had an exclusive that one of Biden's hires for the Department of Energy's Office of Nuclear Energy.
Yes, I saw.
Is a drag queen. I'm reading from the article. LGBTQ plus activist was lectured on kink at college campuses. Now, I don't know about you, but I would prefer that the Deputy Assistant Secretary of Spent Fuel and Waste Disposition knows something about nuclear energy. But apparently, he doesn't lecture about nuclear energy. He lectures about drag queens. Well, nuclear energy is a pretty goddamned important thing in this country, and perhaps a rational discussion of it is appropriate. But no, we're going to talk about drag queens.
On that exact, whether, maybe that person is incredibly competent in the realm of atomic energy waste, I don't know. But I would rather have somebody who isn't focused on basically fringe social issues to the exclusion of a very, very, very important job involving very dangerous materials that are also, depending on what those materials are, they could be militarily useful. There's a reason we tend to very tightly control atomic energy materials and waste materials. And if this person is in these fringe subcultures or engaging in fringe activities, then isn't that a blackmail risk? And isn't a blackmail risk on somebody dealing with atomic fuels sort of a problem? Whether they have the specific skill set or not, there are other serious risks and problems with putting that kind of authority in the hands of that kind of person.
Well, Joe, look at it this way. Look who was the head of the CIA for 8 years. The man was an avowed communist, a crypto Muslim.
Yeah, an actual communist.
He voted for Gus Hall and Angela Davis.
Yeah, he wasn't so crypto.
Yeah, he was right out in the open. And how he even got into the agency, let alone to head it. And look what I'm talking about. Look who hired him. The man who was either the bastard child in a real sense, or the mentee of Frank Marshall Davis, a Stalinist, and he became president of the United States in 2008, and he was reelected. And now look at everybody who's in all these positions. They're all inept, bubble-headed knuckleheads who are products of academia and products of the faculty lounge who don't know reality. And their reality is all that they know is the theories that, and their worldview, which is completely 180 degrees out of phase with reality. If whether it's this Ned Price you know, Ned Ryerson Price or whatever his name is, who got slapped around like a, you know, like a rag doll by Matt Lee, amazingly an actual reporter, for being completely obtuse in his responses about, you know, the evidence that there's supposedly going to be a false flag operation that the Russians are going to use as an excuse to invade the Ukraine. Or you have this idiot Wendy Sherman, who is now, you know, threatening Vladimir Putin with nuclear war or whatever if he does cross the line. And I'm going, these people are literally, they're manifestly irresponsible, but look where they are. They're in positions of power. And then if someone is going to, you know, put, you know, it circles back to every other bureaucrat and every other person who's in a position of power. They're just, their views are 180 degrees out of phase with reality, and they don't care. And that's it.
Oh, and the extent to which they care, it's just contempt for normal people.
Yeah.
Hey, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in just a minute. And we're back, and the subject is insurrection, or so they say. Who's insurrecting who? We have the news now that the Capitol Police, which, by the way, is a federal agency and basically funded and controlled by Congress, last month or so they cleared Officer Michael Byrd in the assassination, and let's not put too fine a point on it, of Ashley Babbitt. And now all of a sudden they declared the beating to death of a woman named Roseanne Boyland to being, basically regrettable but necessary. Now, it's unbelievable. And on top of that, we're learning that the D.C. cops are actually spying and gathering intelligence information on GOP congressmen. I forget the name of the gentleman that they spied on who caught them, literally red-handed doing it. And I believe now also Louis Gohmert is accusing them of doing the same thing. I mean, for all intents and purposes, this outfit is both a Gestapo and a goon squad at the behest of, I would say, both Nancy Pelosi and now, and I'm not going to mince words, Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell has now all but come across now and is supporting the horrendous behavior of Adam Kinzinger and Liz Cheney. He's condemning the RNC, condemning and censuring them. And basically, this is a move to try to kneecap not only Donald Trump in 2024, but any person who is a Magan who supports the Make America Great Again agenda from running, and he wants to run them out of Congress and have the status quo globalists at the helm again.
He is such a slimy little prick. It's unbelievable to me what he said, claiming that it's an insurrection and that the Republican Party was wrong to censure the two Republicans who signed on to the leftist agenda against a president, an ex-president, is unbelievable to me. You know, he was okay when he was ramming through Trump's judicial appointments. I liked that. You know, parliamentary procedures, or whatever they call it in Congress, it's a tough thing, and he knows how to weasel his way around it. But I would much prefer Mitch McConnell to shut up, sit down, and get out of the way.
McConnell is good on exactly one topic, and that one topic is judges. Yep. And that's because I think he enjoys ramming judges through. I think he likes the parliamentary procedure as well. He's very, very good at it. It's a chance for him to shine. And otherwise, he's everything everyone talks about with derision when they talk about the GOPE, right? And these connected ruling class types. He's the worst of the bunch. He just happens to be aligned on judges. And I think that's partly because he enjoys it. But to the lead in, I think what we have now is the Capitol Police are Nancy Pelosi's pocket army. They do what she wants. They're now allowed to kill with impunity, right? They've not only gotten away with it twice, it was declared righteous twice. One, shooting an unarmed woman, and the other, beating a woman to death. That's apparently just fine, as long as you're march in the direction that Congress and especially Pelosi would like you to. And you can then go through and spy on members of Congress, build cases against members of Congress completely against the law and without any procedure being followed, as long as you're going after the right folks. And this is, if you want a great way to try to demonstrate to people your vote is meaningless, this is a great way to do it, right? If you overcome the odds, you find your right candidate, you vote for that right candidate, you get that right candidate into office, that candidate doesn't immediately betray you like all the Tea Party folks did. Well, if they step off the line, then Nancy Pelosi will blackmail them with the Capitol Police. And if you try to go to the way, to Congress and try to support that person, you'll get murdered by Nancy Pelosi's Capitol Police. So what are the Democratic options here? What is the representative option here? If you want to tell me my vote counts and the people I vote for count, but they're being ruled over by this secret police force that does only one thing, and that's dictate the status quo as determined by party leadership, then just what is Congress's role and what is their value?
To your points, first of all, about both of you guys, about McConnell, I led with a really good essay by Jay Wigg over at American Greatness, where he calls for McConnell to be cashiered out, and I couldn't agree more, and I'll quote, "In attacking his own, McConnell trades on the political capital he has accumulated as a result of his reputation for ruthless tactics. He is known as Murder Turtle for his cold scalpel and hatchet procedural deadlines with respect to the appointment of judges. One is tempted to ask, what is the value of that? Are there really no others who could do that? Indeed, there are. And more importantly, where are those judges now? Nowhere. The stacking of the bench with a presidential term's worth of careerist conservatives who got where they were by avoiding risk all their lives has done nothing to impede the evisceration of the Bill of Rights following January 6th, to impede the Biden administration's lawless facilitation of illegal immigration, or to restore the separation of powers." And that's absolutely right. All of these judges have done nothing. What has Amy Coney Barrett, what has Brett Kavanaugh done? What has Neil Gorsuch done? Precious little. They sat on their hands. They did jack shit, both in the, with stopping, you know, the mandates and all the other things. And of course, you know, we all know about Chief Justice Roberts. But when it really counted, when saying that, you know, at the very least, a very deeply flawed and corrupted election in 2020 should have been stopped and should have been examined, they said, oh, you have no standing. You know, the lawsuit from 17 states to prevent the Electoral College from being certified. They said, "Nah, we're not gonna, you know, no standing. You know, we're gonna let it go. It's you guys can't do anything about it." So for all that Mitch McConnell did for Donald Trump in that regard, it's meaningless. Look where we are today.
And it's not, but it's not, as you pointed out, and as the article pointed out, it's not in furtherance of a political philosophy. It's simply a game that they play in Washington. You know, McConnell proved that he's the big swinging dick in the Senate chambers from, you know, 2016 to 2020. Good for him. That's fantastic for him. I'm sure that that's one of his masturbatory fantasies, and I'm glad that he had it satisfied. But the fact is that as they point out, it did nothing to further our political philosophy.
No, it did nothing. And
until that changes, until the professional politician in Washington, D.C. is thrown out on his ass, nothing will change.
And what, you know, really alarmingly to what Joe had mentioned, this is the D.C. cops now, they who are working in a way hand in hand with the FBI and the DOJ. I mean, we still have people who are rotting in jail as political prisoners who are charged with almost to the point of insurrection and treason for doing nothing more than a misdemeanor trespassing and taking selfies inside of the Capitol building. Meanwhile, the real violence that occurred was agents provocateur who were working at the behest of the FBI to create essentially a Reichstag fire with which to blame the right, blame Trump, and blame conservatives for trying to overthrow the government and
Listen, you've got to give Pelosi credit. She's got her SA in Antifa and Black Lives Matter, and she's got the SS too. She's doing something right.
Well, she at least has her own private SS. The DOJ is the wider version of that. I'm not certain belongs to Pelosi, but I'm pretty sure they get along.
Yes, she's not Ernst Röhm. You know, she doesn't have to worry about anything. But I mean, yeah, sure, it's a goon squad.
And on the political prisoners, what really sticks in my craw about this, because a lot of people like to talk about the juxtaposition of how the January 6th protesters have been treated versus the BLM rioters have been treated. But what's an even better comparison, I think, is how are the January 6th protesters being treated versus the Code Pink protesters, who would routinely break in or breach, I think is the word, Congress and harass congressmen in the hallways and occupy their offices, which they did during the Kavanaugh confirmation and various other times. I mean, Code Pink basically takes up residence in the state, in the national capital, and they behave in ways that are generally worse than the January 6th protesters did. And they just get slapped on the back and sent home, and they cash their checks from their NGO. And it's directly analogous what those two groups did, both Jan 6 and the folks like Code Pink. And one group is sitting in solitary confinement in a dank cellar in a DC prison, and the other is setting policy.
Joe, let me just, you know, I forgot the incident, but I mean, I have to look it up now. But in 1983, there was an actual left-wing terrorist attack involving firearms, which no January 6th protester even had. The only people who got shot were, you know, was Michael Byrd shooting Ashley Babbitt and, you know, and killing her. She was unarmed. And Roseanne Boylan being beaten to death by a goon and by a DC cop and a Capitol cop. But in 1983, there was some sort of an armed uprising in the Capitol. And I believe, you know, it was leftist inspired, maybe, you know, Weathermen, if they were still in influential, or the children of Weathermen that were involved in that. And I think the leader was basically pardoned, I think, by Bill Clinton back in one of his last days in office. And she's now either a professor or she's some sort of a big macher somewhere, either in government or in academia, of course. And so look at that. That's insanity. They pardoned the FALN bomber. They pardoned, I mean, what's his name? Biden just is about to release from Guantanamo, one of the 9/11 hijackers. And this is, you know, who's been held, yeah, he's been held for a long time, but he's been held for a long time with reason, but he's just letting him go like it's nothing. This is just, you're saying two justice systems. Well, there's no justice system. It's basically, we rule you and you're going to take it, and to hell with it. And on that cheerful note, we'll take a break and be back in a minute. Final segment. I just wanted to get back and clarify what I was talking about before the break. There was a 1983 bombing of the Senate, and I'm not going to go into the details of what it was about. It was basically people who were angry about our involvement in Lebanon and in the Middle East. And basically, one of the culprits among them was a woman named Susan Rosenberg. Susan Rosenberg was sentenced, I believe, to probably multiple years behind bars. But here's the kicker, according to Wikipedia. Rosenberg's sentence was commuted by President Bill Clinton on January 20th, 2001, his last day in office, to the more than 16 years time served. Her commutation produced a wave of criticism by police and New York elected officials, surprisingly. Well, that's 1980. That's 2001. At least we were fairly normal back then. After her release, she became the communications director for something called the American Jewish World Service, an international development and human rights, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And then get this, a woman who was convicted of bombing the Senate, she became a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice in Manhattan. And then later on, she serves as the vice chair of the board of directors for something called Thousand Currents, a nonprofit foundation. I get the whiff of rotten goulash, hint, hint. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable. So as in the immortal words of Keith Richard and Mick Jagger, every cop is a criminal and all the sinners saints.
So we've got a very interesting situation in Canada where, shockingly, the Canadians are more interested in freedom and liberty than the United States is. But I just saw an article that the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, is warning that American truckers might start this as soon as this weekend. And I would love to see that. I would like to see concerted effort on both sides of the border that will shut down significant parts of our economy. And as long as they do it the way the Canadian truckers have been doing it very peacefully, respectful of the people around them, and simply making their unassailable point that they don't want to be told what to do with personal medical decisions, that they don't want their livelihood to be controlled by some unelected bureaucrat in Ottawa. And we shall see what happens. I know that Whitmer supposedly, Governor Whitmer of Michigan supposedly offered heavy equipment to the Canadians to start moving them off the bridges. I'm not sure that she's bright enough to understand that a single truck, a semi, weighs in excess of 100,000 pounds, including the load. And to move it requires not just heavy equipment, but skilled men. And they just don't have them. I have also read, and again, I can't confirm this, that a significant number of Canadian towing services are declining the requests from the government to start moving these trucks. But that is wonderful, wonderful protest. That's exactly the way it should be done. And I hope that it spreads across the border.
This is something, by the way, that's reminiscent in a way of 1980 or right before, 1980 in Poland, of the Solidarity movement with Lech Walesa and, this organic just disgust already with communism. And let's hope that this kind of an organic movement, and I've sort of pondered, does this movement need someone who is a figurehead or a leader like Lech Walesa, or is it better just to sort of have it as an organic grassroots kind of nebulous movement where everybody just sort of as a hive mind decides that they're going to be like Atlas and Shrug, and they ain't going to move the trucks. And if you don't like it, that's too bad. So this is, I think, the powers that be, both on this side of the border, on their side of the border, and really around the world, are starting to take notice of this, because this is not a quote-unquote fringe movement. This is truly a movement of the people. Things are going to get very interesting.
Yeah, it might be a movement of truckers, but port, right? I mean, you can see that when you watch any of the footage of, there's at least as many private automobiles as there are big trucks, and you have, the jerry can revolt in Ottawa is a great example. All those people aren't big rig truckers, and the copycats are starting. Right. There's talk about something like that happening here. There is one happening in Australia. There may be one happening in Austria. These are sort of hotbeds of this kind of oppression. And this kind of thing is really, really hard to stop. And as long as your demand is very, very clear, and I think this is where the Canadians did a sensational job, is they said, this is about the vax mandate. We want it gone, and then we'll be gone. And as long as you have that firm endpoint, this is my condition for victory, then they have all the support in the world, and they have a huge amount of support in Canada, from what I've been seeing. And I think that's really, really key, is beware the mission creep on what you're trying to accomplish. But the border blockade that started out west in Alberta, and then when Trudeau won't even come and meet with these people in Ottawa, he runs away and calls them a fringe element and refuses to even meet with them. Then they moved south and they've started blockading that border with Michigan. And that was a brilliant move. That is one of the most important international border crossings in the world, is the Ambassador Bridge. It carries a quarter of our enormous trade with Canada. And that's going to hurt. And it's already hurting. Plants are idling. We saw Premier Ford for Ontario sort of losing his cool today and calling a press conference and having a lot of bluster, but not necessarily a great way to act on it. And it's the most impressive thing I've seen in a long time. And I am thrilled with how that appears to be going in Canada, and more power to them. They're showing us the model, I think, in a pretty important way.
I think your point about keeping it simple is valid. First of all, it's simple and it's easy, because a significant number of Canadians believe in what they're doing. And I'm not talking about the truckers. I'm not talking about the people who are even directly involved. I'm talking about the typical soccer mom, or whatever the equivalent is in Canada, the hockey mom, is probably a little sick of it. Maybe not all of them, maybe not even most of them, but some of them. And drawing on the typical Canadian for your support for this quite simple issue is, as you said, it's fantastic, and mission creep would be the worst thing possible.
Well, it certainly looks as if Atlas is about to shrug, or is certainly in a prime position to shrug, and that's as I said, causing people to sit up and take notice. So what the reaction is going to be is anybody's guess. Anyway, that's going to put the wrap on this one. This has been the Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks podcast, episode 10 for Friday, February 11th, 2022. On behalf of CBD, Joe Mannix, and myself, JJ Sefton, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again.
Thanks for tuning in, folks.
Thank you.
Improvisa en el viento rápido me dio.